Hi, this is Tim Lightfoot, the host of your weekly podcast, and I want to tell you about a really cool event that we're having here at the Huff Hines Institute. On March the 23rd, 2012, from 1 to 4 p.m. here on the campus of Texas A&M, we are sponsoring the Huff Hines Discussion 2012. We're calling that the HD2. If you remember from last year, we did the Huff Hines Discussion 1 last year in 2011, where we brought in 8 leaders and thinkers in sports medicine. We gave them the microphone for 18 minutes, and we said, tell us what you think are your big ideas, or what's coming down the pike. And we asked them to tell us in a way that we could all understand, not full of jargon. And we've posted those online, so many of you have seen those already. So join us if you can on March the 23rd, 2012. Check it out on the website at huffhinesinstitute.org. Look at the great speakers that we've got coming. We're really pleased with the lineup of the folks that are coming. And if you can't make it here, join us in June when we start putting those up as video on the website. Now, on to the podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huff Hines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huff Hines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huff Hines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huff Hines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm Tim Lightfoot, your host, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and be with us this week. This week we have a very special guest with us. We have Mr. Brian Minitti, who is the Assistant General Manager for the Washington Nationals. And for those of you that aren't baseball types, that's a franchise in the Major League Baseball series, in the National League, as a matter of fact. And he's been the assistant general manager since 2009. Welcome to the podcast, Brian.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're more than welcome. Let me tell the group a little bit about you. You were actually with the Pittsburgh Pirates for 9 years, and you concluded there as the director of baseball operations. You originally came from the University of Pittsburgh, and you had a double major in mathematics and statistics. And so you bring a lot of interesting skills to the job here. So let's just start off the conversation, Brian, with what does an assistant general manager do?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the titles are similar across the league and probably across sports, but the job function is really different. A lot of it depends on, you know, the skill set of the individual. And a lot of front offices you'll see in every sport are, you know, complementary skill sets. And for me, my role is mostly administrative. I didn't play beyond high school. I didn't play in college or professionally. So my track is mostly administrative. I handle most of our contract negotiations, our rules compliance for Major League Baseball, everything administrative for the department, you know, budgets, any sort of paperwork issues, drug program, all that kind of stuff. So I get the junk work that the GM doesn't want to do.
Well, with the drug program nowadays, that's an interesting topic as of late.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. It's something that gets, you know, tickered with every year, and there's always a new loophole and a new, you know, challenge each year.
Yeah. I think in many situations, Major League Baseball has kind of been a little bit of a ahead of the curve in some of their drug testing policies. Do you think some of the recent events are going to push that back, or what do you see Major League Baseball doing going forward now?
Yeah, I don't think it'll get pushed back. I think Major League Baseball likes the idea of being kind of the all-American game and wants to keep pushing that forward. I think the challenge is going to be that, you know, the reality of the world is the robber's always ahead of the cops to a certain extent. And I don't mean that to implicate our players, but I mean just in general, you know, there's always going to be a new chemical compound of masking something or a new version of something. I mean, I know, and one of the hot-button items these days is, you know, the K2 spice and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a challenge. You know, you're never going to have this thing licked. You're always going to have to stay pushing forward and that type of stuff. So I think Major League Baseball is going to continue on that path and keep trying to, you know, eradicate this stuff. And I think they've done a good job. I mean, even since I've been in baseball since 2001, it's really cleaned up the game quite a bit.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about there's always a new masking agent out there. One of the other guests that we've had on the podcast a couple of times is Dave Epstein, who is a sports writer for Sports Illustrated and broke a lot of the stuff with Brian Braun and so forth. And that's one of his take-home messages. He says, you know, there are so many chemistry labs out there trying to make all this stuff that it, for the enforcement people, it's just an incredibly difficult thing to try to keep up with it.
Well, and it's not just even the masky stuff. I mean, I don't want to sound, you know, like I think everybody's doing something. I think the reality is, you know, a lot of guys take things that they think are harmless and end up not being harmless. You know, there's right. something in it that nobody knew about or nobody realized would cause them to fail a drug test, and that happens quite a bit. Mm. You know, and it's, and you know, we preach to our players all the time: don't put anything into your body unless you talk to the trainer or talk to the strength guy or talk to the employee assistance program guy who handles our therapeutic use exemptions. Make sure you know what you're putting in your body. And a lot of times, you know, guys will take things and they seem harmless or over the counter, and they end up, you know, causing a flag on a drug test. And, you know, that's something that you know, Major League Baseball also has to, you know, worry about, is chasing the tail on things that don't matter just because it failed a drug test or, you know, vice versa.
Yeah. And now I know in the NCAA there's a clearinghouse that supplement companies and all can go through to, you know, prove that their supplements are won't cause the red flags on the drug test. Is there something similar to that for Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I mean, we tell our guys don't buy anything without the NSF certified label. You know, and that extends everything. Now, they have numbers that you can call through the strength coaches to buy them through Major League Baseball. I don't know how the allotments work typically, but, you know, I mean, the reality is guys will go to the GNC and grab a box of protein bars or something like that, and if the label's not on there, they're running the risk.
Right.
You know, because everything's made in the same vat, unfortunately.
Right.
So it's not foolproof. It's not perfect, but it's something they try and do.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think the lay public maybe not, they don't appreciate, is that these guys are responsible for everything that goes in their mouth and what it does to them. And as you said, they just can't go into, say, a GNC and buy stuff off the shelf and take it like so many other people can.
No, I mean, a lot of guys will tell you that's how they failed tests or, you know, had to go back for a second round of something. You know, it's when they bought something and thought it was okay and it wasn't.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So certainly a different thing to deal with. Now, you guys are certainly getting ready for the season. I think spring training started a few weeks ago. And as a matter of fact, y'all just had your first game, I see, this past Saturday. Are you ready to go?
We are. We've had a relatively healthy camp. Guys have come in pretty good shape. Guys, a lot of guys came early, which is always nice. And, yeah, we're ready to get the games going now and get guys, you know, tuned up for the season.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, interestingly, about baseball is they have such a long season. I mean, 162 games and all the preseason games as well. What do y'all do as a franchise to try to keep them healthy through all that?
Sure. Well, we've got, you know, maintenance lifting programs and exercise programs throughout the year to maintain strength, not necessarily build strength.
Yeah.
We have a team of doctors, both in the major leagues and the minor leagues. We have doctors at each of our minor league affiliates. We have an athletic trainer on staff at each club, a strength and conditioning coach at each club. We have, you know, an array of specialty people, chiropractors, optometrists, all that type of stuff. So we really try and, you know, help these guys in any way we can to make sure they're staying on the field and that, you know, everything in terms of the physical end is okay.
Right.
You know, we control as much as we can control on that end because the performance is something we can't really control.
Right.
But, yeah, we spend a lot of time, you know, both in the off season, during spring training, and during the season, day to day, just making sure these guys are at their physical best.
Right, and to some extent, that's a wise business decision for you guys, because that's a lot of money that you have invested in these players that are on the field.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, and then, you know, when you start comparing it to a lot of the contracts guys get these days, because nobody's cheap anymore.
Right.
You know, you realize that hey, it may cost us, you know, $75,000, let's say, to have this person on staff, full time, benefits, travel and all that type of stuff, but, you know, we're paying, you know, however much in signing bonus for a guy out of the draft, or we're paying, you know, this guy's annual salary is minimum $480,000.
Mm.
You know, so relatively speaking, if it helps keep them on the field for a few days extra or healthy or all season or whatever, it's a good investment.
Yeah, just a couple of games here or there, and that can make the difference between a good season and a bad season, couldn't it?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. So you mentioned something that's interesting, and that is that, you know, baseball is one of the few sports, at least in the United States, that has kind of this minor league system. How do you maintain the quality of your sports medicine throughout the leagues? You talked about having athletic trainers and having physicians at each of the clubs. So many of your major leaguers, when they get hurt, they get sent down for rehab assignments. They're kind of out of your sight at that point. How do you guys keep a handle on that rehab and make sure they're not overstressed when they're playing double A or triple A ball someplace?
Sure. Well, that's the beauty of the technology these days. I mean, guys are always in touch. You know, you're, in terms of how you choose your doctors, I mean, your major league doctors and trainers are involved in choosing your doctors at, you know, the short A level. So nobody doesn't know each other. Nobody hasn't kind of gone through the process and discussed and fleshed out the options, that type of stuff. You know, in terms of the day-to-day, you know, guys are constantly in touch. I get a, you know, all of us in the front office get a, an athletic training report after each game. And after each workout, letting us know who on their club, you know, has what issues, whether it's they came in with a sore ankle or their elbow's tender or, you know, their tooth hurts, you know, whatever it is. We know about it every single day. And as we send guys out for rehab, we have structured programs that our you know, major league head athletic trainer and major league team doctor put together and implement. And, you know, it's up to our minor league trainers to enforce it and to actually see it through. And there's always enough eyes and ears around that if something goes wrong, we know about it immediately. But, you know, the way the chain of command works, guys are, you know, certain that, you know, if player X can only throw 25 pitches, he throws 25 pitches and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, or if, you know, if he finishes an inning at 20, he'll go throw five in the bullpen or whatever, but he's not going to throw 26.
Right.
So guys are very compliant because they know that ultimately, you know, if something happens on their watch, it's going to be on them. So, you know, everybody's respectful of the process, and you know, we make sure that the goal is to get guys healthy and back to the big league.
Well, and you mentioned that the technology has, I think, has changed that probably over the last 15 years, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, I've been in the game since in 2001, and even since then, you know, every trainer has a BlackBerry and will call and email in between innings with updates on velocities or how an at-bat went or how a guy looked running down the line or if he had any defensive plays to challenge him. So everybody knows what's going on immediately. I mean, during at any given point in the summer, we could be getting, you know, 25 emails during a game from trainers or staff who are at the game to watch, not necessarily the coaches that are on the field, but, you know, people that are there saying, hey, I saw so-and-so, you know, looks good, you know, was challenge on the ball to his left or have a double down the line or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting constant updates to let us know what's going on to make sure these guys are healthy and look okay.
That's interesting. In the old days, they used to talk about the scouts were the ones, but now you're talking about scouts and medical personnel or people that have input on that.
I mean, yeah, and scouts too. I mean, scouts are at the yard every single day. And, you know, everybody offers a different perspective too. You know, scouts may see a guy and the way his arm works a little bit differently than a trainer does or than I do. Or whatever. So yeah, everybody, you know, submits their opinions or their view of what's going on, and we make sure it's all accounted for.
Yeah, you guys have had a recent, I guess, fairly high profile athlete that's kind of gone through all this over the past year or so, and that's Steven Strasburg, one of your star pitchers. Has that system worked pretty well with him?
It's actually worked very well for him and a few other guys. We've developed a pretty nice reputation with our team doctors and our rehab staff here in Florida. Have really done a great job rehabbing a handful of guys from very serious injuries. Steven Strasburg is obviously very high profile. Chin Ming Wong had a very unique shoulder injury. He was a very successful starter with the Yankees and was hurt, and our guys have gotten him back to, you know, to normal, if you will. And you know, those are two of about seven or eight guys I could throw at you that, you know, our guys have done a great job getting back. And, you know, these things are never foolproof. You know, there's always the percentage that don't come back, that don't get healthy.
Right.
That are, or, you know, at the very least, not the same as they were. And we've had a pretty good record to this point. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge asset for us that our training and our rehab staff have done such a good job. It actually helps in the recruitment of players as well.
Yeah.
Because they know that, you know, if something happens, because a lot of things happen to these guys, that we're equipped to take care of them and get them back to, you know, what they were.
Do athletes actually think about that? Is that one of the decisions they make when they go to sign a contract, is the quality of or the reputation of the medical staff of these franchises?
Yeah, I mean, typically, you know, as you expect, they don't think about it until they've been hurt or they've had issues, you know. I mean,
right.
You know, it's a short-term thing. But, you know, you'd be surprised a lot of guys, especially as they get into, you know, later part of their career, will look at, you know, they know what their body needs to stay on the field. And, you know, they know what they need to recover each day. And if they have, you know, a club that has, you know, it's a lot of it's word of mouth amongst the players. But if they know that a club has a good reputation of keeping a guy healthy and keeping him on the field, that's definitely a factor.
Yeah.
We've done a really good job of keeping some veteran guys on the field that have had trouble staying healthy. Again, a credit to our rehab and our training staff. And that's definitely something that guys factor in later in their careers and then younger if they've been injured. We signed a guy this offseason who had a shoulder injury, and he really chose us because we had, you know, experience getting guys with unique injuries back.
Yeah. Well, you know what you're talking about comes back to a theme that we've hit upon sometimes during these podcasts, and that's how modern day athletics and sports teams in particular are really a team effort on the administration side as well. It's not just the coach or the general manager making the decisions now, but it's often those individuals making decisions along with the athletic trainers and the physicians and the sports medicine people that go along with it.
No, absolutely. I mean, it starts with the, you know, the general manager, you know, trusting his people and having good people, you know, and you got to realize that, you know, you have these people that are experts in a certain field, you got to use them for that. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, it begins with that. And, you know, once you have that in place and you have good people in place, you let them do their jobs and, hey, take them at their word, and track record speaks for itself. And that goes with scouts or doctors or anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had situations where you look back 3 years and go, you know, that player really wasn't as good as we thought, or, you know, that surgery didn't work out as good as we thought. You know?
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, you're always kind of, I don't want to say keeping score, but, you know, that's part of our industry is you're always keeping an eye on how things have worked out. I mean, you make the decisions you make at certain points based on the information you have, but, you know, when you have good people and they have track record, it counts.
Yeah. Over the last several years, while we're on this topic, there's been this discussion, kind of underlying discussion percolating, I think, through baseball about number of pitches versus letting guys just especially do a lot of long throwing and a lot of repetitions. I know there's a group out of Arizona that really advocates that. They say pitchers are getting injured more because they're not throwing enough. You talked a little bit a while ago about especially Strasburg having a limited number of pitches or your pitchers having a limited number of pitchers. Is that where you guys come down on this on the Nationals at this point? It's like we're going to limit them to a certain number of pitches and that increased repetition stuff may not be true?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that nobody knows.
Yeah.
And then nobody's got it figured out, and that's why guys get hurt all the time. And, you know, what you do is you try and do your best research and you make your best educated decision on how a guy should progress.
Right.
We've had success with innings limits and pitch limits as guys have come back from injuries.
Yeah.
You know, we've had success with innings limits and pitch limits as guys have, you know, progressed in their career past certain ages or innings thresholds, whether it's coming out of college or coming out of high school or, you know, going up the ranks in the minor leagues. You know, we've had a lot of success. We haven't had a ton of failure with keeping an eye on it and playing it safe.
Right.
You know, so to that end, we're going to keep doing that. I don't think anybody has the answer.
Right.
You know, it's almost these days, when is a guy going to break versus if he'll break?
Mm.
You know, I mean, I think that, you know, doctors will tell you you've only got so many bullets in your arm when you're born, and, you know, with it not being a natural motion, throwing a ball overhand, you know, you just don't know. Some guys can go their whole lives, the Nolan Ryan type, who can throw, you know, a million pitches every day and never have a problem, but other guys, you know, it's going to end for him at 15. So
right.
I don't think anybody really knows yet, and I don't think there's anything exact, but, you know, we're always a little bit more cautious than aggressive with it.
Right.
You know, if only because we've put a lot of money into these guys, and, you know, why risk the next 3 years for an extra 10 pitches tonight?
Right, right. And that's what people have to remember. There is a lot of money riding on this stuff, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And again, if the, you know, 10 or so pitches tonight is not going to make or break the next, you know, however many months. It's not worth sacrificing a guy's career or the next few years of it just for that.
Yeah. Now, I have to ask a question. Looking at your background in preparation for this, I noticed the double major in mathematics and statistics. I apologize for the cliche up front, but are you one of those Moneyball kind of executives?
I'm not. I have people that are a lot smarter than me on staff that do that way better than I ever could.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just fortunate. I was a math nerd. It made sense to me, and that was my major, and I picked up a statistics major as well.
Yeah.
But I'm unfortunately not skilled enough in those areas to claim to be one of those types of guys. But we do have some people on staff that are way better at that, and it really helps.
Yeah.
But no, I was fortunate. I got in when I did, kind of before the Moneyball craze, which actually, you know, really just heightened interest in the game, you know, from the administrator side and people that hadn't played. So had that book come out probably 5 years earlier, had that story been told 5 years earlier, I may not have gotten into the game because it got a lot tougher once that came out. So I was very fortunate I got in when I did.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about you getting into the game, because I read someplace that you at one point had aspirations to be a physician. And here you are in Major League Baseball. How did that work for our listeners who may want to be in baseball at the level that you're at?
Intro, bio, and chem 1 and 2.
Oh.
My freshman year put me to my place. But I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I did. I thought I wanted to be a pediatrician, and seemed like something that I would have enjoyed. But as it worked out, I didn't do so great grade-wise, and I worked very hard at it.
Mm.
And I switched my major up and ended up just going with math because it made sense to me. And I was able to get an internship my junior year with the Pirates and really just never looked back.
Yeah.
Once I got the opportunity to intern, I basically gave up. I gave up my friends and family to stay. And that's one of those things. Once you get the opportunity, you don't let it go. So my last year and a half of college, I was working 40 to 60 hours a week with the Pirates, and I had a couple of part-time jobs on the weekend. My grades aren't anything to speak of the last couple of years of college, but I went all in on trying to make a career out of this. Once I realized it was a possibility, I didn't want to let it go.
Yeah, and no one's probably asked to look at your grades since then.
I've been asked my GPA one time, and it was really a joking thing over lunch.
Okay.
Thankfully, because I would not get hired based on that. I went all in to make sure that this career happened for myself.
Well, but that's a really important point for so many people, and that is especially so many students that may be listening to this at this point. And I guess let me back up and ask you before we make that point, and that is, I'm sure that internship you got was extremely well paid, right?
Actually, my internship was free.
Oh.
I had no pay for that.
Yeah.
But it was only, thankfully, it was only about 4 months. And then for the next 2.5 years, I got $7.50 an hour with no benefits. So,
wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't always allowed to get paid for the hours I worked.
Yeah.
So it was touch and go there for a few years, but stuck it out and it worked out.
Well, but again, now we come back to the point, and that is that so oftentimes that success really requires you to pay a lot forward, I guess, put a lot in at the beginning and a lot of hard work to get the payoffs down the road, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does, and you take a lot of chances too. I mean, I went 3 years with no benefits, and that was not probably the smartest thing to do. And I was working for free quite a bit, and I was fortunate that I lived in Pittsburgh, which is an inexpensive place to live, that I was able to survive like that. Quite frankly, so if circumstances were different, and I was trying to do the same type of thing with the Mets or Yankees or Red Sox or Dodgers, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah.
I was fortunate I was in a city where I was able to survive on, $17,000, $18,000, $19,000 a year for a few years.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I was fortunate to be with a group of people that took interest in me and my development and really allowed me to stay and keep learning and keep growing.
Yeah. Well, what's the future? If we have people that are interested in working for Major League Baseball and they're interested in working kind of an administrative side of things or even in the sports medicine side of things, what's the future? If you were to sit a student down and say, okay, here's the training you should have, and here's what you need to do, here's the roadmap, what would you tell them?
I'd tell them that you got to work like crazy to get an opportunity to intern, and even these days, it's not uncommon, unfortunately, to have 3, 4, 5, 6 internships before you can get a full-time job. So you have to really get in and get any sort of applied experience you can get, no matter where it is. Just make sure you relate whatever you're doing to what you want to do, whether it's baseball or something else. Create separators for yourself on your resume, but you got to be willing to really stick it out. It's not going to come quick. It's not going to come easy, and it will not be lucrative for a long time, if ever. That's one thing about the sports industry in general, and definitely in baseball, is that the payoff is not big. It's very similar to working in the minor, being a minor league player. You don't get much money until you get to the major leagues, and it's very similar even in these jobs. It was a long time before I was clearing $25,000 a year. You got to make sure you can live within your means and keep things in perspective that really this is what you have to do to get what you want.
Yeah.
It's not going to be an easy road.
Well, it's a good thing you like what you do.
You have to. I mean, everyone always says, wow, what a great job. And the reality is a lot of days it's a job like any other. You deal with the same types of issues that everybody deals with in all their jobs, and it's still corporate America in many ways.
Yeah.
When you're sitting there watching baseball and you're spending time with a 20-year big leaguer talking the game and you have all these very life experiences that are unique to what you do, you realize you're very fortunate. But You know, a lot of times you wear it just like everybody else does. I like to tell my guys in the office that, you know, it's no different than any other job in the world. You got to do 90% of the things you hate to do, 10% you love.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, and you just mentioned it. It struck me. And you don't have to play hooky from work to go to a day game, do you?
No. Unfortunately, you just have to stay a few hours past to get everything done.
Well, before we give you the opportunity to give us your take-home message, we have to ask for a prediction. How are you guys going to do this year?
No, you're not going to get that out of me.
Oh.
hopefully, better than last year. And I, you know, my belief is if we stay healthy and guys perform up to their normal levels, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, cool. So, as we do with all of our guests, Brian, have you got a take-home message for us?
I would say just simply if working in baseball, working in sports is what you want or whatever it is you want, you know, just make sure that you keep the right frame of mind, keep your expectations in line, and don't be afraid to work hard and learn. Learn from everybody you're around and learn ways to gain advantages and you know, better yourself every single day and separate yourself from the pack. There's a lot of qualified people out there that, especially these days, that are able to do what you want to do. Just have to find ways to separate yourself and make yourself invaluable.
Yeah, great take-home message. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, Brian.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. And for those of you that are listening, we want to thank you for taking the time to download us today. I was looking here at the producer, and we do have a question today. Our question today is, what were the two majors that Mr. Minetti had when he graduated from the University of Pittsburgh? Be the first one to answer that question correctly. Send it to us via email to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of those free podcast T-shirts that we have. We've got the new version out that look pretty nifty, as a matter of fact. So send us the answer to that question and be the first one, and you'll get that free T-shirt. Thank you all for tuning in today. And, again, thank you, Brian, and best of luck this season. We'll be watching the Nationals, and you don't get to wear the uniform and run out on the field, do you?
Oh, God, no. No, that's good for everybody, I promise.
Okay. Great. Well, have a good week, and I hope all of you have a healthy and active week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Kelsey Sachs and Cheryl Myrick and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zellner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.